Hey and welcome to the PhD cast. This week we're discussing the response to the first week of Channel 10's new breakfast show, Wake Up. We're talking Melbourne Cup, the race that stops a nation, how Anchorman, Tab and Maya activated around it, Twitter floats, brand domain names are now available for brands to own, and strategy. What does it mean anyway? It's the podcast that stops the nation. This is the PhD cast from PhD Australia. Hey there, I'm Chris Stevenson. Joining me on the PhD cast this week are PhD cast regulars Nicola Davey.
Hello.
Christian Zvara.
Hello.
And Stuart Gurney.
Hello.
A very mixed bag this week. Let's start up.
We're not a mixed bag, is that what you're looking
Yeah, well, we are a bit of a mixed bag.
Speak for yourself.
I'm a bit of a mixed bag, but only third Thursday of the month. First up this week, a dramatic first week for Wake Up, Channel 10's new breakfast show. It debuted with 52,000 viewers, with about 30,000 watching in the first half hour. It's been a dramatic week, lots of commentary. There was a fairly damning write-up on the SMH, which was quite critical of the performance of that and the show after its Studio 10. It's fair to say it's been quite aggressively critiqued, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been lots of coverage across popular culture and media around it. I saw bits of it. I've not seen a whole episode, if you like, at the moment, but there's been a lot more. I'm starting to form my opinion, interestingly, from the articles that I'm reading about it, so you know, that starts to perpetuate not a necessarily good run for the property.
Yeah, there was the intention for us good people here at the PhD cast to live blog it on Monday morning. But the reality of live blogging at 6:30 on Monday morning dawned to us all on Sunday night, and that was very quickly abandoned. But I did get up early to watch some of it, and to me, I mean, I thought there was a genuine, slightly disorganised, good humour banter to it. I think it has genuinely got legs. I think there is some chemistry, and I thought it was nowhere near the kind of the criticism or the bashing it got over the course of the week from commentators in the press and in the industry.
I think that was so much of a big cultural. Basically, all the eyes of media are watching this big Channel 10 big bet. And I think because of that, there were loads of cynicism around it to begin with. So I agree. The bits I saw, I thought were really interesting. I love the relaxed atmosphere because it takes it away from the existing breakfast shows. And breakfast is such an important segment to define a channel identity. And I think that was quite a nice way that they did that. Yeah.
And the opportunity is massive for them to get a different and distinctive counter offering on breakfast. It is a massive opportunity.
Yeah, actually, I think it all comes down to the fact how much the channel is actually investing in it. Obviously, it doesn't really matter. Okay, it's not true. It matters what people think about it, especially professional people, and especially
what we think.
Especially how many viewers are there. But I think as long as the channel keeps on pushing it and keep on tweaking the content of it and just says that this is something that, as you said as well, it's going to clearly define a part of my identity, so I need to treat it as a brand element of mine, and I just need to keep on going with it.
Yeah,
I think they had an interesting launch week. They've obviously invested as a channel a lot into it. I think they've got some amazing guests that are coming out. They're doing the whole like music festival type of thing, and if you look at it, that, you know, they're trying to borrow the credibility, I suppose, from the type of guests that they're getting on the show to be able to shortcut this, you know, to build this perception of what this show is going to be all about. I just think that as an industry, I'm really disappointed again in what the expected critique of this show is going to be like. I feel like it was always set up to, people wanted it to fail,
yeah.
And I just feel a bit like that. Like it's a week old. Let's have these conversations after a month, let's have these conversations after 6 weeks to be able to start looking
at. What were the expectations actually? So what would have been a good number?
Well, there were never any official expectations. There was a lot of trade reporting of their competitors saying that they should be expecting 100,000 viewers. But like, of course competitors are going to set expectations that they don't expect them to get. It's a classic spoiler technique, and I think that any platform like this, they grow us, not show us, right? Very few programs like this will just emerge fully fledged. Blackadder didn't get good till season two. There's a whole lot of shows. We can reel them all off, but these shows, and certainly chemistry and content, take time to develop. And just freaking get off their backs and give this probably time to grow, because if this market needs anything, it's less pitching, and it needs a credible breakfast alternative.
Although I think in one of the podcasts we had previously, we did talk about it being a vanilla solution to something a little bit more radical, and I do think that it has got that makings of being. Like, cause the analogy for me is the Big Breakfast in the UK, which is like took the concept of breakfast and completely redefined it, and it feels like Wake Up is trying to do that, but it's just not pushed it hard enough yet. Yet might be the important addition to that, but it does feel a little bit like still a panel show, still the conventions of breakfast not done in a unique way yet.
Yeah,
and I think that, I mean, some of the listeners will be really familiar when you say Big Breakfast, but for those who aren't. What was a Channel 4 programme in the UK. Yeah. What was the Big Breakfast and what made it so good and special?
I think it just took the construct of breakfast, which was really more about news and really formal approach to news, and actually just completely subverted it and made it more humorous, engaging, funny, playful, all the things you wouldn't have expected about that category and that programme style.
And no desks, so there's two chairs sat, and
yeah,
it's all
just,
very open. And
I think like the Manly backdrop for Wake Up is great.
It does change the dynamic.
But like, how can they push that further? And I think there's massive opportunities to make that an interesting property, because then what will happen is advertisers will start to want to buy into that interesting style. And I think because it's not polarizing enough yet, there is that little reticence from some clients to want to get involved. It doesn't stand for anything yet.
And I love the Twitter feed as well. It was like they were reacting live on air to stuff being said on Twitter, and they were joking about the stuff said on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And that was really good, like that live element, and really not just saying this is being said on Twitter, but actually playing with it, running with it, and building it into the content.
Yeah.
And I like the local element as well, like the local news as well as the national elements of news, because I think that's a nice local touch that they're adding to the programme to make it make sense across the nation. So for me, there are nice elements. Once again, it'd be great to see how they evolve those further.
Definitely. I just have my fingers crossed for them.
Ever the optimist, aren't we?
Well, I think we are, but I also think that it's incredibly sensible and realistic that we want an alternative breakfast offering. I think nobody would argue there's a lot of sunlight between the offerings on 7 and 9. There's a need for something for certain demographics, for certain brands, for a different place to play in, a different space to play in, and we want that to work, we want that to succeed, and we want that to have scale. But let's all get off their backs and give them a bit of time to get it. The other big event this week, in fact part of hashtag best ever, was Melbourne Cup. Melbourne Cup was on Tuesday. For anyone who doesn't know what Melbourne Cup is, which is probably unlikely, Nick, what is Melbourne Cup?
It's the race that stops the nation.
That's it.
It is it's a horse race that for some reason stops a nation quite literally, and people who reside in Victoria get a public holiday, and everyone who doesn't gets an unofficial public holiday, and we all go out, get dressed all up nice. And it's a great Australian day.
It is a great Australian day, and a great Australian day for brands as well. We saw quite a few brands activating in and around the event. What were some of our favourites?
There was the Maya one I quite liked. What they did is in the build up to Melbourne Cup Day, they really tried to own that area of fashion, so using digital panels to kind of suggest different fashions that you could wear, you and your friends could buy both male and female suits and dresses. And that sounds like a really obvious, simple activation, but for me, I quite like the fact that you've got a really Australian brand owning something that's very uniquely Australian. And in a market where we're quite small compared to the rest of the world, a lot of these big brand activations happen from a global point of view. It's nice to see brands taking a bit of a local approach to stuff.
Completely agree. I think the example that I'll talk about is the Anchorman Ron Burgundy integration with the Footy Show. And I think it's just a really smart, clever, well-planned and advanced tactic that really thought what's going to really plug into Australiana kind of on it at this time of the year. And the fact that an American Hollywood type of property did that on such a local level, it was really good. And I agree with you, Stu, that I think that there was probably a missed opportunity compared to how other brands have become part of popular culture on things like April Fool's Day and things. We've spoken about this a little bit earlier than the podcast, actually. It's quite astonishing to think how many brands want to make the most of this April Fool kind of sense of mind, yet not many local brands really probably went
activated in Australia. Yeah.
What would you be thinking as local brands that would be like a really good
Qantas.
I mean, Qantas probably few hundreds of thousands of people between Sydney, Melbourne,
and the booze brands to
get there.
I wasn't exposed to it. I mean, maybe there was, and I've just not been exposed to it. But a lot of the booze brands could have done something.
VB would have been an obvious. Maybe it was just not activated in this market, but
maybe.
But then if it's not, then there's an opportunity for brands to add scale to this activation as well. So it may happen in Victoria, but then how can you make that? Amplify that so other people feel part of it, because as the race happens in Victoria, but people still feel part of it, and so there's an opportunity to act like that.
But we all certainly felt part of it. So and a big thank you to Karen Stace and the guys TUE, who took great care of us on Tuesday afternoon as well, which was awesome. On Anchorman, I loved Anchorman. I thought that was part of a brilliant activation. Full stop. I actually wrote a blog post about this. I know, right? And I wrote a blog post about it. I thought it was a great example of inside-out marketing. It's an example of where, rather than doing ads for Anchorman 2, they actually took part of the product, they took a sense of the product, and then used that as marketing. And then they went a step further than that, and then actually used local relevant topics. Because if they did it on the Melbourne Cup here in Australia, you can bet your bottom dollar they were doing on other subjects around the world.
Yeah.
Really, really smart activation of a character from a property to
most distinctive asset, arguably.
Arguably the most distinctive asset, possibly from Steve Carell's character. An incredibly distinctive asset leveraged really, really well. And we also saw a really smart activation from Tab as well. Our cousins over at OMD, they actually went over to Tab and set up an HQ within Tab itself. So Tab had social media content and search and SEO experts sat in Tab, optimizing their response to the conversation to social media all afternoon. And respond to what was being said. And TBWA Sydney doing some really good thinking around using the amount of conversation on Twitter to predict the winner of the cup as well. So could it was a correlation between buzz on Twitter and the eventual horses that won. So it's a really good, smart activation from Tab as well, from our cousins over at OMD.
That's an interesting point, because I've heard a lot of brands and agencies doing their how can we predict the winner based on social buzz. I don't really get it, because surely it's self-fulfilling prophecy. So the more likely a horse is to win, the more people are going to talk about it, therefore the more high it's going to be on the rank. Isn't that...
That's what we're saying.
But then surely that's just self-fulfilling, because the more you're going to start talking about it. Basically, the favourite is always going to be the one, because it's always going to be the one that most people talk about.
Well, not necessarily. There could be some dark horses.
I'd be amazed that you weren't
familiar with the concept of a dark horse.
I totally am. But then less people talk about it, so surely that can't make sense. Because the moment that that becomes a tipping point, and lots of people talk about it,
a tipping point,
it reaches a tipping point, then
reaches
the tipping.
It reaches lots of tipping points, presumably.
But at the moment it becomes populist, basically, then the moment it's not a dark horse anymore.
Well, we could perhaps debate this all after. Okay. Well, I mean,
email Chris. If
you've got, don't email me. I'm not putting my email address on the internet. Anyone could
maybe
write
ask us on Twitter.
Yes. So if you've got any particular comments or observations about this or any other articles in this week's PhD cast, feel free to message us on Twitter at PhD Australia, or of course at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/PhD Australia. So do feel free to get in touch. And of course we're on Google Plus as well. And so this or anything else. But perhaps in a future episode of the PhD cast, we might even get one of those experts from OMD and to tell us what they did and how they did it, and they can answer this conundrum.
I think so. I would love to know that.
I mean, it's literally a debate that stops the nation.
It is.
Well, or at least a PhD cast. Some really quick news this week. Twitter floated. Lots of
stunned to silence.
So basically, all I would say that Twitter, I mean, it's phenomenal. Twitter has never made a profit. And it's now valued at, I think, $47 billion.
Yeah.
It made $134 million loss last year. And yet it's valued at $47 billion.
But it's only kind of making money out of advertising, which is where it's probably one of its pitfalls, when you compare it to things like Google Plus, which is starting to diversify how it's thinking about creating income from that property. I think that's probably, they're relying a little bit too much on advertising, which is still in its infancy, because especially in this market, Twitter's growing, but it's not as big as it is in the States or the UK. So, I think it's probably focused too much on advertising currently, but you'd hope that...
Is Twitter even an advertising-friendly platform? And I think that... I mean, I strongly believe that the whole debate around mobile not getting its fair share of ad revenues is because mobile isn't built for ads, and it is. You've got to find other ways to use the mobile platform to connect brands and people. Arguably, is Twitter the same?
Well, that was kind of my point. So I don't think push advertising is where it sits at the moment, but there are other ways that Twitter can be integrated and utilised to drive incremental revenue.
Yeah, I think, obvious ways are content, but at the same time, how do you make revenue out of something that's just basically a brand's own property rather than just using simple ads? I don't know if it makes sense what I'm asking, but for instance, if you think of Oreo and the brilliant stuff they're doing on Twitter, do they leverage on it? Does Twitter leverage on it and generate revenue out of these?
No.
So this is the question, how would they be able to actually do that? What's the added value that they can generate rather than having all the social...
Well, if you look at kind of YouTube as well, to create a branded page, you have to invest a certain amount of money
to drive people there.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I think the value exchange a brand would have for that important space and being that important space is absolutely right. I mean, if you think about the social media agencies and digital agencies out there who are getting a lot of money for posting from brands and from clients, then I don't see why the platform shouldn't get a fair share of that as well. And that isn't just pure push advertising revenue. There are ways to do that. I think also, going back to that point, like, there's no Twitter content opportunities like within the organisation itself. Like Facebook, it always surprises me that actually Facebook itself as an organisation doesn't have any kind of strategic specialisms around how going in to actively help brands and charge for that resource. So that feels like that's another way of we're basically solving Twitter's problem.
Yeah. How to make you more profitable.
We're putting fires out all over the place
today.
Stopping a nation. We'll be stopping a nation with our solutions. That was a quick round. That was quick news. And in other quick news this week, you could buy any domain name. What's going on?
Well, basically, brands can now buy their own domain name. So, for example, ANZ Bank could buy www.loans.anz, for example. And so there was an article in BNT this week talking about how what this means for marketers. But
what does it mean for marketers?
Well, I think it's going to be just eating into more budget for nothing's sake.
So let's just be clear. This is ridiculous, right? Because no one remembers the domain name and types the domain name in, do they?
You might have more chance if you're like NAB, and to Stephen Linkler's example she did earlier on today, if you're like loans.nab. I think that might be slightly more memorable than maybe NAB/loans/001. Is it more memorable
than typing NAB
and
loans
into
your nearest available search engine?
But I don't know if it affects some of the organic searches as well by having that in the name. So
I think from an SEO point of view, there is an opportunity for it to be better rooted into the brand page. But you've got to think about this from a human behaviour point of view, and people are going to continue searching. So even as a call to action, would you know, an interesting test definitely as to on a campaign level, are you going to have a greater acquisition, or are you going to drive greater memorability for your brand with a custom domain name versus a Google?
Can I hazard no?
But
for me, it just sounds like having your own license plate. So it's like, really cool, it's funky, but it doesn't make any sense to be perfect.
I don't know, because if you're a global brand, so if it's a .Pepsi, for example, then would I save money as a global organisation by investing on a global brand name, and so therefore that affects my ranking in search? Maybe. So that would be the only way I can see that being adding value.
Yeah.
When I'm not investing money against search and pay for search. So I can kind of see that benefit. And also because we are getting kind of a lot of consolidation around global brands, so having that consistency around creative and messaging and ownership of that space makes it centralised, and that might be another way that it becomes an appeal for different organisations. I mean, I agree, I'm not suggesting, I sound like I actually think it's a good idea.
No, I think it
was your idea.
It was totally my idea. I'm actually getting what does it cost? Something like $800,000 per
grand.
Registration.
You're making good money then.
I wish, yeah, I am, as I'm standing.
No, I think that's a good point of view, though. Yeah, if global brands doing it, then does it?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
I think it's a ridiculous thing to spend money on, is what I think, but perhaps in sort of fashion like that. And in our last this week, Stu was busy out there giving comment and opinion. Out there giving his, Stu is in short of an opinion, and you're giving a few to the industry this week. What were you talking about this week, Stu?
So I did a little article just talking
about... Stu, what's that?
Stu, just talking about the relative... overemphasis of strategy in our industry. I know it's the irony when we're all strategists now sitting around talking about it.
So I don't know why the four strategists of PhD sit around and debate strategy.
Just because I think there's so strategy is a great glamorized term in this market, and it's so easy for different disciplines and parts of any agency to want to jump in on that effectively erodes what that means, and also erodes what they do and their core competencies. So, I mean, it all stemmed from the point I remember being in a cross-agency meeting where there was literally about 20 zillion strategists.
There were 20 zillion
strategists. And the moment anyone says that in a room, you get that kind of beady look from everyone else to go, really, what do you actually do?
Yeah.
So that was what kind of really sparked it for me. But the point being, there's so, like, for example, comms planning in PhD is not strategy, and it's a brilliant discipline, and it's an important discipline. So let's not try and hide it behind strategy, because it's actually, if not more important than strategic resource.
Yeah, and I think that by having strategy in people's type, the overuse of strategy is completely taken away from the fact that we should all be strategic thinkers, and so by strategy not being in a title, shouldn't you?
Yeah.
You're not thinking about the long term, or you're not thinking strategically.
Yeah.
So I liked your article, Stu.
Thanks, Nick.
I didn't comment because I didn't want it to look like, oh, you know, weird. Like I had a crush on you, a work crush.
You can.
Okay.
So I also like that the term digital. So hopefully we got to a place where not not everyone has digital in their title, because digital is a bit of a redundant point, because most things in a media agency have
digital
affected
exactly.
by them. So
it starts with mobile.
Yeah, maybe it shouldn't be mobile. Maybe we should change our name to Mobile Listeners. All mobile listeners now.
Mobile hairdressers, they look
at that. Which seems like as good a place as any to say a big thank you to the crew this week. I think it's fair to say it was random, but it was a lot of fun. A big thank you to Stu.
Thank you.
Anzi.
Thanks.
And Nick.
Bye to all the mobile hairdressers this week.
If you are a mobile hairdresser and want to get back to us on the value of Twitter quotation or anything else this week's PhD
guest, email Chris.
Email me or just find me on Twitter. I was
floating.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Bye.
3PhD Australia. You can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus at PhD Australia.